For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The following program was pre-recorded, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Get ready to take notes, because school is now in session. Tackling the biggest issues in education, this is Education America. Save the classroom, save the country. Here are your hosts, Headmaster Rebecca Hagstrom and co-host Mark Durkin.
Well, welcome to Education America, where we're taking steps to save the classroom so that we can save the country. Come along with us every Saturday evening at 6 p.m. K-12 education is the playing field. As the 16th President Abraham Lincoln succinctly stated, the philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next. I am Rebecca Hagstrom, founder and headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy in White Bear Lake, Minnesota, and my co-host Mark Durkin is out today. But Minnesota's social studies standards have been in the review process for the past year and a half. The standards have undergone two revisions since the first draft were released in fall of 2020. The public has been vocal in providing feedback on both the first and second draft of the standards, in large part due to the many organizations, including Center of the American Experiment, raising public awareness regarding the concerns. Now the third draft of the standards have been released and are also open to public comment before they enter the rulemaking process. Joining us by telephone tonight to discuss the third draft of Minnesota's Social Studies Standards is Catherine Kirsten. And Catherine is a writer and an attorney, a senior policy fellow, and founding director at the Center of the American Experiment, having also served as its chair from 1996 to 1998. Catherine has also served as a Metro columnist for the Star Tribune from 2005 to 2008, and before that was the opinion columnist for the paper for 17 years. She's a regular contributor on this show, and Catherine, as always, it's an honor to have you join us again tonight on Education America.
Well, it's great to be with you, as usual.
Yes, very good. Well, because this is already the third draft of the standards, Catherine, can you start by giving us a quick summary of the process that's already been undertaken since the first draft of the standards were released?
Yes. The first draft was released at the end of November 2020, and this is part of the statutory provision that standards would be subject to revision, state standards, every 10 years. Mm-hmm. So it's been now a year since that first draft was released. There was a second draft later this summer, and this now is the third draft. Mm-hmm. Comments were being taken on the benchmarks in the standards until December 14th. Okay. And going forward, there will be a public comment process that closes January 14th, I believe, okay. A 60-day process. Those comments will be read by the administrative law judge who will oversee the rulemaking process that is being launched now.
Okay. So, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that process later in the show, the process going forward. But thanks for providing that context and background. It's helpful. Well, now that the third draft of the Social Studies Standards are released, as you said, just recently, how different are the third draft of standards from the previous two drafts?
Well, they have all been very bad because they are all pervaded by an ideology that is extremist, political in nature, really runs counter to the vision of America and, frankly, what it means to be human that I think most mm-hmm. Minnesotans hold. However, what makes this draft particularly bad mm-hmm. is that the drafting committee and now the Department of Education itself mm-hmm. have incorporated a new so-called strand mm-hmm. or content area. The statute provides for four mm-hmm. so-called strands or kind of disciplines within social studies, those being history, geography, economics, and citizenship. Mm-hmm. Now the Department of Education has determined to add a fifth strand called ethnic studies. Mm-hmm. This is a new and very powerful kind of vehicle that progressive forces are using to impose a new ideology on the students, starting in California and now here. So let's just say it's kind of the essence of woke.
Yeah. Yes. And, you know, one of the things that really struck me about that is not only is the content of that fifth strand problematic, but when you consider that there were already four strands, that's a lot to cover in one subject area, you know, citizenship and government and economics, geography, U.S. and world history. I mean, those are massive things to cover in and of themselves. And then now to add a fifth strand that is going to be expected to be covered as well is I think, really problematic just from a pure time standpoint, too, in the classroom.
Well, that's true. What it really is the lens. It's kind of the philosophical, ideological lens through which all the rest of the content, such as it is, mm-hmm. will be taught. And one way that the department has done this is to literally drop most of the basic factual content in history and geography in order to impose all kinds of identity and kind of critical race theory focused requirements on students.
Yes, and that was actually where I was going next. You mentioned that in this article that you just wrote recently for the Center of the American Experiment that the political activism seems to play a much larger role in this third draft and actually all three drafts compared to the more factual based content of the previous social studies standards. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, that's absolutely right. I think you get a sense of that from the fact that there are three so-called ethnic studies standards. Mm-hmm. Now, the first is titled Identity. That means you are your skin color. The second, though, is titled Resistance. And to read mm-hmm. this is in places like reading a manifesto from Occupy Wall Street. The mm-hmm. idea is that America is deeply, fundamentally unjust and that students must organize to take active steps mm-hmm. to resist American institutions in their current form. So this really permeates these standards in their third draft.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I, you know, this whole notion of oppression, you know, this division that leads to looking and viewing the world through, or especially our country, through the eyes of whether you're either an oppressor or you are the oppressed. As you said, if that's part of the lens through which all subjects are studied, or not subjects, but all of the social studies content is studied, it's really going to change the way the kids learn about America. And that's actually one of the things that I wanted to talk about as well. In the recent article, again, that you wrote, you stated that the third draft replaces objective historical knowledge, facts about the key events and figures of the past, with a fixation on dominant and non-dominant narratives and absent voices. Students will graduate largely ignorant of the events and the leaders that shaped America and the world, but primed to view our nation with reflexive suspicion and hostility. So can you share with us some of the examples of that missing the missing elements of history that our Minnesota students will no longer learn, and the impact that that's going to have on their view of America.
It's really mind-boggling, especially when you compare these so-called standards to the social studies standards that were adopted initially back in 2004. They are really outstanding. The students who actually learned what those standards include would really understand well the historical events and processes that produced our contemporary moment. They would understand how rare democracy is, say,
yes,
in the world until the most recent days. Literally, I think it's fair to say, essentially all of that historical content. I'm talking about just knowledge of the leaders and the historical events throughout our history that led, that produced the world we live in today. So, for example, the American Revolution is now mentioned, but names like George Washington, Lexington and Concord, York, they never appear. And instead, students analyze, quote, dominant and non-dominant narratives and indigenous perspectives. There's essentially nothing about America's role in World War II. I am serious.
Unbelievable.
Nothing about Roosevelt, Churchill, Stalin, D-Day. There is no mention of the September 11th attacks. There is no mention of ancient Egypt, the Roman Empire, the Middle Ages, the French Revolution. There is one mention of the European Renaissance, but only to identify the, quote, influence of Islamic centers of learning.
Unbelievable.
On European, right? Yeah.
So let's summarize.
I could go on.
Yeah. Let's talk about that for a minute. So they're going to learn about the founding of America, but they won't learn about George Washington or Concord,
right,
or the Revolution. So really, they aren't learning about anything with respect to the founding of America. All they're really going to learn is that somehow these founders were oppressors because some of them were slaveholders.
And that's basic, yeah.
And they didn't really believe in the Constitution because they still held slaves, right?
Yes. there are places in these citizenship standards where some of this is touched on, the Constitution, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I think a major reason for that is that Minnesota students are supposed to be able to pass at a low level an exam based on the U.S. citizenship exam before they graduate from high school. They don't really have to, but that's in law. So I think that's one reason that in that context there is some information that's kind of, but not about the revolution itself, not about the great figures who created our nation. It's all about competing perspectives, and the reason for this is that the folks who drafted these standards clearly don't believe in the notion of truth,
right,
objective truth. They believe that our skin color determines how we see everything in the world. So it's all just a matter of, your truth, my truth. There is no objective truth in their view. So life is nothing but a power struggle between contending perspectives.
Yes, which is just a hopeless future if this is how kids are going to be taught about the world,
right,
and about themselves. Even it gives them no sense of hope if it's just one big power struggle.
Well, there's no sense of a common good.
Yes.
So people who have different skin colors cannot reason together and compromise in an objective way. It's not possible because we are all so different and so determined by skin color that, frankly, democracy no longer really becomes possible.
Well, we are talking with Catherine Kirsten on Education America, and we're discussing the third draft of the Minnesota Social Studies Standards. And I want to move on to the world history element. You touched on this a little bit as we discussed the last question, but you mentioned that key events are conspicuously missing from the standards on world history as well. So the draft is silent on the Soviet Union, its gulags, the Chinese Cultural Revolution, yep. Pol Pot's killing fields, North Korea, and instead it reserves a tone of outrage for the U.S. imperialism and oppression. So my question is, do you see any correlation between the missing events and what we're seeing across American schools nationwide and our culture in general with respect to critical race theory?
Oh, absolutely. Now, the critical race theory essentially teaches that we are not human beings, individual human beings first. We are members of racial and other intersectional groups. Mm-hmm. Number two, life, political, social life, even individual interactions are a matter of a power struggle between oppressors and victims. And finally, that America is riven by systemic racism and essentially has to be transformed for, quote, equity to prevail. Those are the assumptions behind these social studies standards.
Mm-hmm. Well, and when you think about these missing elements of I keep saying U.S. history when I mean to say world history, Soviet Union, the gulags, the Chinese Cultural Revolution, Pol Pot, these are all examples in history where power led to massive death. And it's as though they don't want the students to even have any hint that what's being set up in our country right now could lead to that someday. They don't want to teach the kids that. And, you know, when we cut our kids off from history, then we're doomed to repeat, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. I think that's why you don't see really anything about the details of World War II, because America was the world savior. That imagine the D-Day invasion. Imagine what the world would be like if Hitler and the Imperial Japan had won that war. It's inconceivable that we'd have our life we have today. They don't want students to consider that. That's why they don't teach that slavery is a near universal institution until recent times. They don't want the U.S. ever to appear in a good light.
Mm. It's just so disturbing. I never imagined I'm 58 years old. I never imagined that in my lifetime I would see our educational system so deeply cut off from the true history of the world.
Very true.
Well, you mentioned earlier that the original social studies standards were passed by the legislature in 2004, and then the legislature is no longer involved in the process of drafting or voting on these proposed standards. Why was the legislature removed from voting on the social studies standards in the first place? I think you and I have talked about this on previous shows, but just, you know, as a reminder for our listeners, is the legislative body doing anything now to try to reclaim that rightful position as elected representatives?
Well, the reason that it is not involved is that, unfortunately, when the legislation that led to the creation of the standards back in 2002-2003 was passed, the legislature itself simply determined that revisions would take place every 2 to 10 years, or could, but that they could just go through rulemaking without any kind of weighing in by the legislature. That was profoundly misguided. There is legislation in other states that have a similar setup, suggesting or pushing for required legislative approval revisions, and that I think is absolutely a bill that could be supported.
Do you hear any talk of that here in Minnesota?
Well, there's talk of it, but of course the problem is that with our current governor, if he continues to be the governor, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and then you mentioned that the way it's set up right now is it only has to go through a set of revisions, and then there is a standards committee that's in charge of doing those drafts. And tell us a little bit about that standards committee, what it's made up of currently, the WALS appointees, but what should it really look like? What was the legislature's idea when they considered who would be serving on those committees?
Well, when the first committee was created and the legislature was involved, the newspapers were all over it. And it was great care was taken. Now, this was under Governor Pawlenty. Mm-hmm. But there was a cross-section of, as statute requires, it requires educators, it requires parents, it requires members of the business community, et cetera. Mm-hmm. The committee that was chosen to draft these standards, and it's kind of evolved mm-hmm. over the last year, is very much stacked by with people who share this ideology. Mm-hmm. To our knowledge, there are no valid representatives of the business community, and statute requires that. So, of course, there will be challenges as this rulemaking goes on, that the statute was violated in that and other respects.
Yeah. And are there parents on it? When I looked at the list of people, I didn't see any. Everybody was associated with some type of a nonprofit organization or a school, and many of them sounded like they were very leftist, progressive type organizations. Yes.
Activist groups. I'm assuming some of those people are parents. But to my knowledge, you're correct that I didn't see anybody listed there as a parent.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And one more comment on this committee. I watched one of the open sessions on Zoom and last spring, I believe, and there is a woman that they have hired as a consultant who is also from a CRT-based nonprofit who is leading this whole process. And she started the meeting by having the committee members go through an exercise that was also very based in oppression versus oppressors. And so it almost seemed like from the beginning they've set it up that they will come out with a certain outcome. And regardless of how many drafts, how much public comment, it seems that they plan to end at a certain place that they predetermined. So
people who represent this ethnic studies movement, it just keeps evolving, right? I mean, we come up with the notion of critical race theory, and it morphs into a variety of other ethnic studies. It started in, of course, California, San Francisco, and it grew out of like Black studies, Chicana studies, Indigenous studies, all those grievance studies programs mm-hmm, that began mm-hmm. in the late 1960s. So now we have the fruit of all their graduate programs.
Yeah, which is really, I mean, when you think about that, 50 years approximately, that's a pretty fast movement. And you're right, the fruit, or shall we say the rotten fruit, right?
Correct.
Do you know how long, I think you actually mentioned that people can comment through the 14th. Who do people contact if they want to comment on these standards?
Well, comments will be directed to the Office of Administrative Hearings. I mean, the Minnesota Department of Education should see these too. But what they should do, what people who want to do this should do, mm-hmm. is to go to the website of the Center of the American Experiment. Mm-hmm. It's www.americanexperiment.org /standards.
Okay.
And when they do that, they will get to our Raise Our Standards page. And there we give people instructions about how to do this. Okay. So there's a petition people can sign that lists summarizes all the flaws mm-hmm. of these standards. There's also, if you go right below that on that page, there is a link that will take you directly to the Office of Administrative Hearings website.
Oh.
You'll see it right mm-hmm. away, and there you can comment. Now, we give you some suggested talking points, mm-hmm. but you create this little profile, and then you can get right into the, you know, the conversation or the debate. You can see what other people are saying. It's kind of like newspaper commenting on a newspaper article at the bottom of
sure.
the article.
Sure.
So
mm-hmm.
I think that is both of those things are really good things to do.
Yes.
Sign our petition, which we will be submitting, and then going on yourself and in your own words, describing what is wrong with these terrible standards.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. And again, that is, I will announce this at the very end of the show, but centertheamericanexperiment.org/student or standards, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right. Good, good. If the standards are approved by the administrative law judge, I don't think we have time for you to go into detail of what's the next step, but we know there's an administrative law judge that will get brought into this process.
Right.
What is the earliest date they will enter into student classrooms?
Well, my understanding is that there was a delay that was adopted by the legislature, I think in the special mm-hmm. session of about a year to like 2023. I have, though, I think, seen dates more like 2025,
okay.
At least floated by the Department of Ed, because their SONAR statement, the statement they now have to write defending these, they say could take a year and a half to write. And
oh.
then there is the, you know, the judge's deliberations, you know, et cetera.
Okay.
So, you know, it won't happen tomorrow, but it's mm-hmm. it's crucially important that
yes.
people make their voices heard.
Yes, and a few years goes by very quickly.
Yep.
So in our last, you know, minute or so, how influential are these standards in really guiding the coursework in the schools? If the standards, for instance, don't move forward with the fifth strand and the overwhelming influence of CRT, do you think school leaders and teachers will really abide by that, or do you think they'll take it upon themselves to teach it anyway?
Well, I think that those who wish to will do so. We see it right now. You know,
yeah.
it's up to schools what curriculum they adopt.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no test, no social studies test,
mm-hmm.
No statewide test. So, you know, the problem is if these standards are adopted, then there will be great pressure for schools to teach these. But in the end, teachers do have a fair amount of leeway.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's all pretty amorphous, but certainly mm-hmm. it would be a very bad thing if these standards are adopted and there's great pressure from the teachers union and others, you know, mm-hmm. to bring all of this straight into the classroom.
Right. Which, again, that's a whole nother topic of conversation, why the unions should even care, right? But they do. And if you want to read more about the influence of unions on education, you can read Rebecca Friedrich's book, Standing Up to Goliath. We've had her on our show in the past. She talks about the influence of the unions on American education. Well, Catherine, as always, it's so wonderful to have you on our show. Thank you for joining us. You always have such great content and information. And I do hope our listeners will go to the Center of the American Experiment website so that they can make their voices heard. And if you want to listen to this podcast or any other podcast of ours, go to savetheclassroom.com. See you next week.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.